head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Ross. Today I'm with Matt Jones, Kevin Harnett, Pat Forty. I'm with Anoush Sariat, Kristen Wall, United States Congressman John Yarman, Sarah Bohanter, and
welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So, here's Rick.
And thank you for joining me once again on the Rusty Satellite Show. This is show number 230. 230 consecutive Thursdays in a row we've had a show. Isn't that great? I am very excited about my guest this week. I always bring you the most interesting people in the Ville, and this week, I don't know how I keep doing it. I tell you, you are going to love meeting my first guest, Val Jones, who is not single-handedly, but mostly responsible for the rebirth of Whiskey Row and the preservation of the facades there and the presence of the Duluth Trading Company retail store there and some great apartments. And, you know, we almost had some breaking news as I was on the day I was talking to Val down on Whiskey Row. It was announced that two brand new Marriott hotels are going to be built right there on the corner of 1st and Main, across from the Aloft Hotel, behind those facades. It's going to be, you know, that's going to be one of the most exciting places in town, that whole block, even down on Washington Street that's been blocked off for what seems like years. That section of Washington Street is going to be open, and there are going to be thriving businesses, restaurants there. So I talked to Val about the development of that property and how that's come along, and you're going to like the conversation. In the second half of the show, I have Rob Locke, who is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity. And I learned a lot this week about Habitat for Humanity and the things they do. It's not just about, you know, groups getting together for charity and building houses. There's a whole lot more to it. It speaks to the affordable housing community, and they're doing great work. And they have an office that they have a building they refurbished down there in Butchertown that you wouldn't believe. It used to be a bakery. And I went down there to see Rob and talk about that. So we're going to have those interviews coming up, plus a lot more. First, I want to thank my sponsor, Passport Health Plans, who is in some time moving to the West End at 18th and Broadway. And if you want to check out some information I'm putting together on that, go to passportwellbeing.com/the community. You can see a bunch of stories I've written on that, and would be glad to talk with you about those. Or if you got some suggestions for others, that'd be great. Passport Health Plan doing a great job in this community, and I'm really proud to be associated with them. All right, well, let's get on with the show. I'm going to be back to talk about some other things, and I got to be in my bonnet. I've got something I'm all fired up about, and there's some big news to talk about in the city. So. We'll enjoy that, but I think you're really going to love hearing about the project at Whiskey Row and how Val Jones came to be a part of it. And here's the interview.
I admit I used to think people addicted to painkillers just needed to toughen up until it happened to my daughter. She really needed help. Thanks to Passport, we got it for her. Our doctor and her Passport case manager made sure she got the services and treatment she needed. Together, we got through it.
Find out how you can get Passport at passporthealthplan.com/together. Passport Health Plan. We're in this together.
And today, the Rusty Satellite Show is in a place I've long wanted to get inside, down here on Whiskey Row with Val Jones. Val, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
2004, you got this thing started, and we're getting some fruit here. I had to do some shopping a few weeks ago at Duluth Trading Company. That's
good,
an amazing
for you.
Place.
Yes. It's fabulous.
How did you get a company like that to because there's no other retail around here, really, right here in the middle of Main Street?
Yeah. Well, you know, Duluth Trading has an online business, and they knew that they had a lot of customers from the zip codes centered around downtown Louisville, including southern Indiana.
Okay.
And my understanding is that the founder of Duluth, it's still a very hands-on company. The founder is still very actively involved. Came to Louisville and said, this is my kind of town. You know, this is the kind of town where Duluth Trading should be.
Wow.
They did look at a couple of suburban locations, as we understand it, but they always wanted to be downtown. And so we just had a bit of a tough negotiation over numbers and, you know, how the economics could work for them and at the same time work for us.
Sure.
And that wasn't easy. But in the end, they were motivated and we were motivated and it came together.
Yeah.
And
well,
by the way, they are doing incredibly well. They have very high sales, have had very high sales volume in the less than 30 days that they've been open. So
yeah.
I think they're going to prove the model that retail can work in downtown Louisville, that it's time.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of amazing. And Tuesday afternoon when we're talking, I walked in there. There's a bunch of people in
yes.
there walking around and talking. So anyway, and it's kind of a cool store. It's got a cool factor, I guess, to it.
That's right. They kept a lot. I mean, the walls are the same. There are cast iron columns in the middle of the store that date from around 1901. So there's a lot of historic material still intact
sure.
in that space.
Sure. Well, you just told me sort of a little bit of a history of your involvement in this project going back to 2004.
Right.
I think what my listeners would be interested in is now that we're here in 2017, a lot of things are getting ready to happen, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, it started really with Whiskey Row Lofts on the corner of 2nd and Main, and my brother and I started that as an investment. I mean, we bought into that building in 2004. It took 4 years to buy the building next to it and to make it in a project. So by then, you know, it's 2008. We get ready to start. It's 2009. The capital markets are a complete free fall. Nobody's lending money for anything. So it was really tough to get that project going. And it was really because of the Yum Arena.
They were building that big giant arena next door.
They had just announced it, and they had just actually started Broken Ground. That arena is the reason. Whiskey Row, 100 block between 1st and 2nd Street on Main Street, really wouldn't exist in this way without the Yum Arena. So I think the Yum Arena really has generated some really fun, important economic development activity in downtown. Certainly our block is included in that.
Sure.
So we were able to get that started in spite of the downturn, mm-hmm. largely because of the Yum Arena. And in 2011, we opened that. 5 restaurants, 36 apartments, a beautiful historic theater inside that seats 100 people, and some office and event space. So that was the start, and then Patrick O'Shea's opened up next to us. And then in 2011, a group of investors saw what had happened at that end of the block, at the 2nd Street end of
sure.
the block, and came together to buy 5 immediately endangered buildings. This is 111, 113, 115, 117, 119,
okay.
West Main Street, kind of in the middle of the block. They were in one ownership hand, and that person had decided to demolish them. So this was really under duress. A group mm-hmm. of civic-minded philanthropists, really, came together to buy these buildings. And so we've been working on this since then.
Yeah.
We had a little fire in between.
Well, I remember that it was very controversial. It would have been much easier probably to develop this property if you'd knocked the facades down, but the facades remain. Thanks to you and your group. And so that's great.
And it's more than the facade. So if you mean yeah. after the fire, you know, we're sitting in the lobby of 111 West Main Street, 111 Whiskey Row, and the wall that we're looking at is the original wall. So
wow.
this partition wall exists as it existed as it was built in the middle of the 19th century. So we had the facades, but we also have a lot of the interim in the walls that run in between the buildings.
Okay.
And we have original ceiling joists in the Washington Street level. So there are beautiful, beautiful arched openings in the building. There is still a significant amount of original
yeah,
material.
But you really had to be a lover of
yes.
preservation to go through all this.
This development is an affair of the heart. And it is for me, and it is for all of the investors, it is for everybody who's been involved in it, really.
Okay.
It's not, historic property is never the simplest thing to restore.
Mm-hmm.
There's always surprises. You never know what you're going to find behind that wall or above that dropped ceiling
right.
or whatever. But it's also, to me, the most important because it's what's authentic and local and
sure.
all about Louisville and about our commercial history. And, you know, these walls have been standing here for 150 years. It sort of seems like the least we could do is keep them going.
Well, with all this work, are there any cool discoveries that maybe we haven't heard about?
Well, there, like I said, there's some beautiful old arched openings that are in the building. They're original to the building. And I know you folks may remember the two buildings that we subsequently sold, two buildings to Brown-Forman, and that's where the Old Forester Distillery is being built, which will be really fabulous.
I've heard a lot about that. How far away is that?
Well, they say that that's going to be in the spring, probably late spring of 2018. So not that far. I mean, that's really within sight.
Yeah.
And they've gotten the big crane off the site, so now they are really going able to make up some time and go quickly. So we're really looking forward to having them on the block. They're going to be a major tourist draw. Mm-hmm. They're going to roll barrels of bourbon across Main Street every afternoon into an old-fashioned truck and take it off. So, yeah. And then, of course, on the other side of us, we've got two hotels that are just
getting... We've got, like, breaking news here, don't we?
Yes, we do have breaking news.
Breaking news here on the Rusty Satellite Show. Two hotels right here on this very visible corner at First and Main, across from the Aloft Hotel.
Correct.
Just for my listeners trying to get a sense of where it is.
Yeah.
And tell me about the projects there.
Well, these are not our hotels. This is not my project. But, of course, since I'm their next-door neighbor, we're very interested and very supportive of them. They're going to be it's a Marriott branded Moxie Hotel, which is a boutique hotel, which will have a main door, main opening on Washington Street, which is great, right across from Bingham Park. And then on Main Street, there'll be an Autograph Hotel, which is a very high-end hotel called The Distill, which is terribly exciting to have a very high-end hotel. Well, so we'll have three hotels on this corner of First and Main within the next 2 years.
Wow, that's really amazing.
Yeah.
Now, I was very curious when you were telling me, we're at street level.
Right.
Okay, and there are going to be other new projects, restaurants just below us, and then even way below us.
That's right.
Another floor down, a speakeasy.
Yes. So Main Street between Main and Washington Street, the grade drops down toward the river. Mm-hmm. So Main Street is much higher than the river. And that lets us have almost like a old-fashioned version of a split-level building. So we
A walkout.
That's right. We have a walkout onto Washington Street. So on Washington Street, it's at you're one level below Main Street, but it is still on the main level. So we will have two restaurants there. One that will open at 111 Washington Street, and the other in the building next to it.
Wow.
And those will be open probably in the next 6 months.
Wow. There's a lot of history down there, I know. I'm trying to recall off the top of my head. Wasn't there
The Great Midwestern.
The Great Midwestern.
There is a wonderful history. I'm glad you mentioned that. There is a wonderful history of live music on both sides of this block.
Okay.
On the Washington Street side, that used to be way back in the day, in the 60s and the 70s. That was a great location for live music. And dancing and things like that.
Wasn't there a specific place that... I'm trying to remember the name of the...
Well, the Great Midwestern is the one that I remember. I think there was another one. I've been told there was a bakery on that street as well back in those days. And then in the 80s and the 90s, Main Street between 1st and 2nd, Mercury Paw and City Lights and quite a number of others.
I think I stumbled into City Lights once or twice back when that was going on.
Right. So this block has a history of being a live entertainment venue, imbibing and eating and entertainment. And so I think that's exactly what's coming back, getting to come back.
So, and you told me about the restaurants real quickly.
Yes.
One of them is announced.
The hall on Washington Street is the name. It's going to be a German beer hall,
which
will be really fun. And then we have another restaurant space. We haven't finalized what that's going to be yet, so we're open to talking about that. And then one level below all of that, in the lower level, will be a speakeasy. And that will be opening here in the next several months, the next two or three months. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. It must be pretty, I don't know, satisfying or exciting for you to see because you've had all this time, and then 2015 you had this big fire that was a big setback.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a happy time.
It is. It's wonderful. I mean, having Duluth open was incredibly gratifying because it's, you know what, I just have to also say that when my father owned some of the property on this block in the 90s, and that was always his vision. He had this fabulous three-dimensional architectural model drawn up of this block that showed hotels and restaurants and apartments and stores and balconies and terraces. And it's not happening exactly, but it's 90% of what he envisioned basically 30 years ago. So that is especially gratifying for me, because I worked on it with him in 1984 for a summer. My summer job was trying to get this blog going. So I've been at it for a really long time.
Well, it's great that you, you know, I know you had a interesting and successful career outside of Louisville, and having you back here and building all this stuff is really great.
Thanks. I love being back here. I love Louisville.
Hey, this is Dan Vonderhyde.
Stephanie White.
And we are 40-ish.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
We talk about it every week on the 40-ish podcast. What do we talk about?
Wisdom. We drop some wisdom and just everything that's going on in our lives that relates to what might be going on in yours.
We have guests. We talk to people on the street. We're dropping knowledge all over the place. You can hear it every Wednesday. Comes out on Louisville.am.
All right, and thank you to Val Jones. She took me to a couple of places down there while I was there. I got to see the new... the speakeasy that is under construction that's going to be open in a few months, a couple of levels below the street level on Main, and also the two new restaurant spaces that are being cleared and will be new restaurants in the near future. Plus, and I would love to go into one of these, there are some apartments above, like above Duluth Trading, and they are spacious and cool and have this brick on them that was from that mid from the 1850s. And if you look on the website, you'll see Val Jones, a picture of her in one of those apartments. It's just a really cool scene. She told me the low end, if you're looking for a cool apartment, is like $1,400 in for that. And you could live above Duluth Trading right there in on Main Street on Whiskey Row. What a cool place. Anyway, so let's move on. This part of the show, I usually talk about things that are happening in the city that affect me and or you. And I got a visit today, a knock on my door from a member of the Jefferson Town Code Enforcement staff. And this is the start of something that I really don't want to get involved in. But I am told that J-Town has decided, of all the communities in the country, J-Town is going to be the one that stops people from using Airbnb to rent their homes to people who are traveling. And this is, it's really old school thinking. It's really the work. I don't want to get started. I'm going to gather some more information before I let you in on everything about it. But I tell you, my feelings are just pretty angry right now at the city of J-Town. And it's backwards thinking about modern technology. I mean, this is Airbnb is a popular place to is a popular website, a popular way for people to travel all over the world. Louisville, the city of Louisville, has cleared the way for people to use Airbnb for their homes. In J-Town, stick in the mud, J-Town. Is not going along. They think they can just be the one community that can outlaw modern technology. So we're going to see how that goes. I've already sent a letter to the mayor, and there's an ongoing thread on Facebook about this, and I'm hearing from a lot of people. So anyway, that's going to be a an issue I'm sure I'm going to be talking about for weeks to come. Hopefully cooler heads will prevail. I am not going to give you any statistics or anything, but I've had some success renting my J-Town home on Airbnb, and would like to continue doing so in 2018. There's some people out there who want to put a stop to that, and you know, there's going to be a battle, I think. So anyway, that's the one thing that's going on with me of import. I tell you, the thing that is grabbing the news, their attention in the news today, today we just hear that two more people lost their job because jobs because of inappropriate, sexual approaches to women. Matt Lauer of NBC Today and Garrison Keillor of public radio fame both have lost their job. There's now a list of like half a dozen journalists who have done this. I know this is happening on the non-public. In other words, people who aren't public figures. I'm sure there's a lot of this going on as well. It's really remarkable. I saw a story in the Courier-Journal about a former Rusty Satellite Show guest, Winston Bennett, who apparently, if you haven't heard the story, he had a his history is checkered. Certainly, he lost jobs in basketball because of a sexual addiction, but he seemed to have straightened his life out. He had found a job at a local insurance company, which is where he was when I talked to him a couple of years ago about basketball. And just 10 weeks ago had landed a job under in Governor Bevin's administration with the state. But suddenly he no longer has that job. And the story in the Courier details how a number of emails that Bennett sent to coworkers were considered inappropriate. And it cost him his job. So I tell you, I mean, be careful out there because no matter... I mean, it may be things for some men that they don't even think of as being inappropriate. I think when I heard the story about Garrison Keillor, he said he was quoted as saying he didn't realize that what he said made someone uncomfortable. You just got to really think and really be careful. It's a good thing that these things are happening, that this type of behavior is no longer accepted in the workplace or anywhere else. So, you know, I don't want to get too much further into that, but I think that's going to be our ongoing news theme for the next few weeks. It seems like a lot more stories are on the way about prominent people who are going to end up losing their jobs, losing their livelihood over what most of them admit are stupid things that they did. All right. There's some good news. Just to update you, a very short story. Butchertown, the new stadium that's going to be built in Butchertown took another giant step forward this week, and the city got the money appropriated to buy the land, to prepare the land for the stadium. So that's all good. I've talked a lot on here about Dan Johnson, whose spot on the Metro Council is now vacant. 19 people have already applied for that position, which I guess if you want to be a Metro Councilman, it's a lot easier than mounting a long campaign and running for office to be appointed. But I think those people had to submit the resumes, and somebody on the Metro Council is going to make some judgment, maybe do some interviews, and they'll fill Johnson's spot in the near future. I checked out Johnson's Facebook page because it's always amusing. He's still posting stuff about winning at poker, and he plays online poker, apparently, or online games, and he posts a lot on his personal webpage about how he's doing and people he's beating and all that. So that's odd as well. Okay. I guess the big story in sports, not just the tremendous result from Saturday's Kentucky versus Louisville game. Lamar Jackson just did more than even his biggest backers thought was possible. He single-handedly led the Cardinals to victory, made Bobby Petrino look like a genius, just blew the cats out. They never had a chance. Made Mark Stoops, the Kentucky coach, look like he didn't know what he was doing. And those two programs, of course, are now going in opposite directions. So I guess we'll find out Sunday where the Cardinals and Wildcats will be going for postseason bowl games. And so that will certainly be exciting. But I guess the big story involving another former Rusty Satellite guest, and I don't think it's still in the rumor stage, I guess. Now, someone in Tennessee reported that Jeff Brohm had already accepted the head coaching job at Tennessee after 1 year at Purdue, after, I guess, about 3 years at Western Kentucky. And I'm reading on Twitter, you know, as we speak, I saw a Rick Bozich tweet that said it's not a done deal. And one rumor said that the AD made an offer to Brohm, took it to the chancellor. The chancellor said, that's too much. We went back to Brohm with a lesser offer, and Brohm said no. So I don't know if that's true or not. And we're never going to know. And, you know, all these changes in coaches, I guess it's amusing. It keeps people talking. I'd like to see Jeff go down there. I think Tennessee would be a better spot for him than Purdue. I know he'd make a lot more money. And, you know, since he can't – at least Petrino looks pretty safe. At least for now, it looks like, you know, everybody thinks that Brohm is the next U of L head football coach. But nobody knows how long Petrino's going to be here. And you know, Petrino's got no reason to get rid of him. He's done a great job this year. And the Cardinals will end up – if they win their bowl game, they can be 9-4, which is a very respectable record. And, you know, those things are good. It'd be interesting to see how they do next year if Lamar Jackson leaves. Because Jackson really carried the team this year. He's well deserving of a second Heisman Trophy, in my opinion. But we'll see how that goes. And so those are the big stories in the news I've been talking with people about and sharing. So we're going to move on to our second guest, and that is Rob Locke. I really enjoyed the opportunity to go down to the Habitat for Humanity building. It's on Bank Street. A lot of you probably haven't been down there, but it's in the West End in Portland. And the things that are happening, the momentum I think that's happening in the West End overall is pretty amazing. But Rob is doing a lot of great things, and his organization, Habitat for Humanity, they've got a really nice building. He took me downstairs where they there's a giant room where they put together the walls, and they pre-assemble the wood for the walls of the homes they build, and then they ship them out to the sites and they're building. They're building they've got a new project out in Lake Louisville right now, and that is out in the East End. But as Rob says, there are in the history, the local history of Habitat, a great percentage of their homes have been constructed in the West End. And so it's a really good program. And I was really happy that Rob was able to take time out and talk with me. And so I'm going to get out of the way here and let you hear my interview with Rob Locke.
Hi, this is Alec Voles, co-host of the What Happens Next podcast on Louisville.am. We talk about improv each week with We Are the Louisville Improvisers. With,
yeah, totally.
With Chris Anger and Brian Hines.
Yeah.
And Jenny.
Where's my water?
Okay. Well, right now we're just having a few treats. So we hope you can listen. Find us at Louisville.am in iTunes or using the Stitcher app on your iPhone or Android device.
Today I found my way to Portland, and what a beautiful building I'm in with Rob Locke, who is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity. Rob, welcome in.
Thanks for spending some time to talk with me, and thanks for finding our little piece of paradise in Portland.
Well, there's a lot of great stuff going on here. Tell me about this building, because it's you know, it's got to be fairly new in terms of its new use.
Well, I'm glad you asked. It certainly is new again. The building itself was built in 1924 as the Tip Top Bakery. And if you go outside, there's actually a big plaque up at the top of the building, part of it that faces Bank Street indicates that. It was thriving once upon a time as a bakery. They made the Tasty, T-A-Y-S-T-E-E, mm-hmm. bread here.
Oh, we remember that, yeah.
You remember that? And we actually, when we acquired the building and did some outreach in the neighborhood, hey, we're going to renovate it, we found some people still living in the neighborhood who worked here once upon a time. Yeah. In any case, when we bought the building somewhere around 2011, and it was a shambles. Mm-hmm. Boarded up. The door you came in was a loading dock at the time.
Yeah.
There were holes in the roof. I mean, go into the construction area anymore, and I tell folks, yeah, that's where the koi pond used to be. it was rough.
It was a mess. But now, it looks like any other office building, but you got this great construction area out back, too.
One of the great parts about the building, there were so many. One, when we'd been looking for 18 months, Rick, for a spot, and I got a cold call from a guy that said, hey, I got a building in Portland. It needs a little work, but if you fix the roof, I may let you rent it on the cheap.
Yeah.
And so many moons later, when I found out where it was, we had a construction building right next to this space.
Okay.
So it was, I think of it as a God wink, or I'm, a God guy, so I think there's a plan that's a lot bigger than me going on. And when we realized how close it was to the construction building, we just knew that we had to move forward. And we were able to consolidate that construction line of business, all our back office work in terms of the family selection, all the underwriting, all the development work, and, of course, the restore piece. We have a restore distribution center downstairs, all in one space. And that's just been a great blessing to be able to do
and,
that.
And you were able to move in how long after?
Oh, it was probably a year, 18 months after we bought the thing.
Okay.
It was a significant renovation.
So you've been here a few years, and I guess I can tell you what the regular people think when you hear Habitat for Humanity. You think a bunch of people working on a project together from a church or from some organization who are building a house for somebody. I know there's a lot more to it than that.
Absolutely. Habitat's mission statement, seeking to put God's love into action. Habitat brings people together to build homes, communities, and hope through housing solutions of home ownership, community development, and home repair. I think there's still some myths out there that Habitat's given away houses. That is absolutely not the case. This is our 32nd year in Louisville.
Wow.
We will hit our 500th home ownership project in 2018. And about 10% of those homeowners have paid off. So more than 50 families have paid off their loans. The way it works is we use community effort to build a quality home and to sell it to a family at no profit through a zero interest loan. So the families that have bought Habitat houses, typically wage earners, package handlers at UPS, CNAs at Norton Healthcare, teacher's assistants in the public school system, just honestly parents who want the opportunity for home ownership, want to be able to provide that stability for their kids, they're our largest income stream.
Okay.
So those families making their mortgage payments are really building their neighbors' houses.
And how do they? The homes, I guess they're all over Louisville, but a lot of them are here in the West End.
Absolutely. Certainly, for the first 25 years or so, the Habitat was building. We worked out of the vacant property list. I mean, we were really going wherever we could get nearly free land, and which was mostly West and 9th Street, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 homes in Russell, close to that in the Portland neighborhood, and several in California. We have in the last 5 years or so been intentionally acquiring property and building in as many parts of Jefferson and Oldham County as we can.
Okay.
So spending a little bit more of our resources to acquire property in neighborhoods where there are already services and grocery stores and businesses closer to jobs. Our West Louisville work, we realize that we've got to think about not just the house, but what's going on around the house. That's why we added the community development and home repair components to our mission statement, Rick, because we know that house in and of itself doesn't really make for sustainable community change.
Okay. Yeah, and I just did want to ask a question about the restores. You've got a handful of these stores. I mean, for somebody that doesn't know what's in there, how do those stores operate?
I think of Restore as a family business. So we started Restore over on Floyd Street, I think around 2006, and have grown that into a small chain. So we've got three stores. The one on Floyd Street, the original store, is still there right across from Papa John's. The store in Portland neighborhood on our campus is here as well. And then the biggest store is out in Hikes Point Plaza.
Okay.
Restore is a thrift store for building materials, furniture, and appliances. Anybody can donate. Restore hotline is 805-1416.
Okay.
And so give Kaylee a call. Kaylee's the voice of Restore, so she'll answer the phone. And
so do the people that go there, are they home builders? Are they
just regular people like me that are
looking for stuff?
So there's no you don't have to have a code word or a, you know, it's not a speakeasy or something where you got to hold your mouth right to get in the door. So it's open to the public, and the one in Hikes Point's open quite a bit. And boy, you never know what you're going to find at Restore, but I'll tell you, we get some great things through there. I am a donor and a shopper, as I hope you will be as well.
Is it all? Is all the product donated?
The vast majority of the product is donated. We do buy a few things on discount and sell them in the stores.
Okay,
but the vast majority is donated.
Okay. Well, it seems like there's so much to it in terms of I'd like to ask you specifically about some of the people that I guess you help and how you get these. Is there a connection between the groups of people that I guess you recruit to build the homes, the labor, and the new homeowners?
Well,
or not? What motivates these groups to get involved in a Habitat project?
Well, I think Louisville's a very generous and giving city as a general rule. I think Louisvillians want to make a difference. They want to get involved and they want to help our community be all it can be. So I think we're blessed to live in a city like that. I do think that there are often connections that are tangential to a home buyer. We have several sponsors that are large corporate citizens like Humana, Norton Healthcare, Brown-Forman, and there are many wage earner folks that are employees in those businesses who have bought Habitat houses.
Okay.
Occasionally they'll align. So, we recently built a house that Norton Healthcare sponsored, and the person that bought it was an employee there.
Okay.
We didn't set that up. Right.
So if you're looking for a house, how do you qualify to become a buyer of a Habitat house?
Well, there's a kind of a window of income. So you've got to earn at least 30% of area median income and no more than about 80% of area median income. And I'll use round figures because everybody wants to know, what does that mean? So for a family of four, the 30% of area median income is kind of the low 20s. $21,000 or so, and the 80%, the high end, is the low 50s, so at $51,000, $52,000, and it varies every year, and it varies by the size of the family.
Okay.
So you can find some of that information out on our website. You can even apply on our website.
Okay.
So the money is one piece. The how much debt you've got. There's some concerns if you've got. We need to make sure you can afford the house, right?
Sure.
The income that you've got coming in.
Because you talk about numbers. Okay, what do these houses sell for?
Well, most probably our average sale price these days is, and I'll say first mortgage price. Okay.
Okay.
Because we always get an appraisal and we sell houses for the appraised value. But we write a first mortgage based on what it costs us to build them. So our finance committee gets together with our construction folks every year, and we figure out how much is this thing going to cost. So it's about $85,000 for our three-bedroom house generally.
Okay.
Most of those houses are appraising for a little over $100,000. And so in the, for simplicity, let's say the appraised value is $105,000. So that's $20,000 difference between the cost and the value.
Okay.
We'll capture that in a soft second mortgage. So that way, we'll forgive that over time. If the home buyer lives in a house for 20 years, then that's all theirs free and clear.
Okay. Okay. Well, running out of time here, but I want to ask you about the neighborhoods here. I know you're very involved in neighborhoods. I saw your newsletter here that you have these events for Love Your Neighborhood events. And so, I mean, I guess you put a lot of effort into getting involved with the people in the neighborhoods, right?
Well, as I was mentioning earlier, we are very aware that a house is just a tool. Mm-hmm. That families can use and communities can use to become all that God intends. We know that it takes people connecting with one another and remembering that they're powerful. As homeowners, as citizens in community, when neighborhoods struggle, and they have been lately, mm-hmm. To remind people that they're powerful and that there are others out there like them who want their neighborhood to become all that God intends it to be. That's what we're trying to do with our Love Your Neighborhood program. We're not trying to helicopter in and have a bunch of people come and fix a neighborhood up. There are tons of people that are willing to help, mm-hmm. but what we're trying to do is to identify those homeowners, have conversation about what's going on in the neighborhood, and find out what they envision their neighborhood needs and what it could be. Typically, what we're finding is they want to have events where the families can come together across generations. There's a lot of concern about trash and debris, so they want to clean up neighborhoods.
Sure.
Many times there's community gardens that have gone fallow, or especially parks. A lot of times there's all these small parks that are covered with weeds and they're not usable. So, you know, we'll gather folks, we'll have conversation, we'll try to figure out what these things are. And then the Love Your Neighborhood is designed to be an event that feels like a festival with a purpose. So we bring the neighborhood together, bring as many people as we can to, you know, this one event to really have a day that's a celebration, but also a day of action for neighborhood improvement.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's going well. I guess, you know, it seems like the neighborhood, this is my last question, is the neighborhoods around here in the West End are seemingly on a positive momentum path.
That is absolutely my sense and my hope. I was in a meeting earlier today with some of the kind of large housing organizations in town. And one of the realities is right now some of the property values west of 9th Street are really low. They're honestly, mm-hmm. they're depressed a little bit. And, you know, the hidden secret is don't sell yet. Right? I mean, because
yeah.
what's
coming?
Well, take a look at Shelby Park. Take a look at Smoketown. Those neighborhoods are, that's what California, that's what Russell, that's what Portland's going to be 10-15 years. So, you know, those neighborhoods of Shelby Park and Smoketown 10-15 years ago, houses there were the values were depressed as well. But today they double digit appreciation. And eventually that's what we're going to see in our West Louisville neighborhoods as well. So, get in, invest, get involved, help be a part of this change, and eventually we're all going to rise together and reap those benefits.
All right, Rob. Well, that is an ideal way to end it. Thank you for being on the Rusty Satellite Show.
I'm thrilled to be here. I definitely want to make sure I say a thank you to Passport for their support of our Love Your Neighborhood project in the California neighborhood earlier this year. That was a great event, involved a lot of different folks, came together there around the California Community Center. So thanks, Rick, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
And that will do it for another episode of the Rusty Satellite Show. This is Rick Redding, your host, thanking you for downloading the podcast. Spread the word. I've talked to a lot of people about this podcast during the week and really appreciate the feedback and enjoy talking to you about things. We got a little controversy this week. I know you'll be wanting to tune in to see what happens with my whole Airbnb fight, but that's going to be an ongoing thing, and whether Jeff Brohm takes the job at Tennessee or not, as of this moment, up to the minute, we sure don't know. But the question is up for discussion. There are a lot of wheels turning on that front. So a lot going on here in this great city of Louisville, Kentucky. And I thank my sponsor, Passport Health Plan, for being part of the show, and urge you to consider taking a look at LouisvilleKY.com as part of your travels around the internet. There's a lot of local news there, And really, as we talk about people who have been on the Rusty Satellite Show before, like I think we mentioned today, you know, Winston Bennett and Jeff Brom, you can go back and listen to those anytime on iTunes or on the RustySatelliteShow.com website or Louisville.am, this fine network that the Rusty Satellite Show is a part of. From our St. Matthews studios at Louisville.am, this is Rick Redding signing off for the Rusty Satellite Show. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, at Ricky Redding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.